Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network. Today on the James Altucher Show.
What would be your advice to someone who's young and seeking to find their identity as well? Because we're all sort of young and empty in the beginning. We're empty vessels in the beginning.
The strongest message I can impart is that knowledge is power. So find out about what your future could be and figure out what you want to do to get to that future. Seek out all the knowledge that you can to figure out what motivates you and then pursue those things. And for every individual, that might be a different goal, a different issue, but every individual has a unique spark, and we have to find what that is and what it leads us to. And if we can do that, we'll find our path. It's the one that we choose, the one that makes sense to us as individuals.
So very excited to have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Kareem, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
You know, I always have to start off an intro with the obvious, unfortunately, which is you're probably one of the, or I mean, you definitely are one of the greatest basketball players of all time. You have the record of most points scored in your career. You played 20 seasons. You were, you know, your team was the champion for so many years. I don't know how many records you have broken in basketball that still haven't been, I mean, you haven't played professionally since 1989 and your records still last. Like, you would think by now somebody would have scored more than 38,000 points in their career, but it has not happened. Do you think basketball has changed?
Well, basketball has changed a little bit. You know, the three-point shot and the way they changed the rules with regard to defense now have changed the game somewhat. You know, you can't play physical defense anymore, you know, where you can use your hands and just the hand checking and the close proximity and bumping people. You can't do that. And that if you could do that, the three-point shots wouldn't be falling like they do. But now that they've taken the hands off of the offensive players so that they can shoot those three-point shots, the three-point shot has become a lot more important. I'll give you an example. We won the world championship in 1985, probably the best team I played on with the Lakers. And we averaged about four or five shots, four or five three-point shots per game. And over that year, for the whole season, from the first game of the season until the last game of the playoffs, we shot about 95 to 100 three-point shots. In 2015, when Golden State won their first championship with Steph Curry, for the season, they shot over 1,000 three-point shots.
So I see. So basically, just the dynamic of scoring points has changed.
And, you know, that extra point that you get for that longer shot can be a game changer. It can, you know, throw the balance of games. So, you know, having efficient three-point shooters out there will increase your team's chance of winning. So you have to know how to use that in today's game. Whereas when I played, it was a more physical game and the three-point shot wasn't that significant.
But, you know, what's interesting just hearing you say this, and this kind of segues into your recent book, which I'm about to mention, and other things, but you've recreated and reinvented yourself many times. I mean, obviously, to look at you, people say, this guy's 7'1". You know, he's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. People know and remember you as a basketball player, but you're so much more. You've written a ton of books on every topic. But your most recent book, Becoming Kareem, Growing Up On and Off the Court, really moved me. And it seemed like a quest for identity. Like, it's about you growing up, you going through college, you beginning to be a professional, and coming to grips with whether you're not whether, but your identity as a basketball player, you know, as a great basketball player. You're coming to identity with your religion. You're coming to your identity with your race, and so much more. And you've continued that search for identity, it seems, over the years. Like, you're a Sherlock Holmes writer, and just the way you analyzed the 3-point shot strikes me as the way you probably think about how Sherlock Holmes thinks. Just kind of analyzing what's the deeper meaning, the deeper layers of what's happening. But is my assessment of your book, Becoming Kareem, tell a little about this, maybe, search for identity. Because, like you even mentioned in the book, so many people, and you point out so many people you knew who changed their names in their quest for identity, just as you ended up changing your name.
Right. I think as a Black American, there's a quandary there because we've had identities imposed upon us as Black Americans. People took away our African identity and imposed an identity and attributed it to Black Americans that enabled white Americans to exploit them. They destroyed the family structure and made it impossible for Black Americans to accumulate any type of wealth or power. And they were exploited for their labor for so long until the Civil War came along. So after the Civil War, they imposed a different identity on Black Americans, one that said that they were useless. They were ignorant people from Africa and of no worth here in America because they were no longer could be forced to work for nothing. So we've had to deal with those issues, the Jim Crow laws that kept Black Americans from achieving anything. So in the middle of the 20th century, I'm growing up and I'm trying to figure out how I can become successful. And I, in order to do that, I have to reject the identity that has traditionally been assigned to me and try to change my identity to something that I can be proud of and something that I can relate to and identify with. And this book, Becoming Kareem, shows the process that I went through, to get there. The mentors that I talked to that enabled me to understand who I was and helped me to figure out who I wanted to be.
And it shows the importance of part of a person's individual identity comes from the quality of the people around them. Right. Like you mentioned, everybody from, you know, Coach Wooden, who was your coach in college, and Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali, Will Chamberlain, all your influences in religion, you know, even ones that, you know, I think it's important to recognize that virtual mentors are important. So the autobiography of Malcolm X had such a strong influence on you and his rise from kind of, you know, sort of, let's say, a more militant form of Muslim to a more spiritual leader. And all of these things seem to come together to help you figure out what that identity is. And I'm wondering if someone who is not, let's say, blessed with the many talents you were, and then on top of it, your dedication to developing those talents into real skills that made you the greatest, what would be your advice to someone who's young and seeking to find their identity as well? Because we're all sort of young and empty in the beginning. We're empty vessels in the beginning.
Well, I would say the strongest message I can impart is that knowledge is power. So find out about what your future could be and figure out what you want to do to get to that future. Don't let it be imposed upon you. Seek out all the knowledge that you can to figure out what motivates you and then pursue those things. And for every individual, that might be a different goal, a different issue, but every individual has a unique spark, and we have to find what that is and what it leads us to. And, you know, if we can do that, we'll find our path. It's the one that we choose, the one that makes sense to us as individuals. And I think every American, in America, we celebrate the individual, and individualism is cherished here and encouraged. So we want every individual to understand who they are and give them the opportunity for the most growth that they can achieve in their lifetime.
And I think there's opportunity and there's growth. So for instance, someone can say, oh, you're talking to someone who's 7'1" and who could dunk in, by the time he was in eighth grade, he kind of had a direction to know where he was going. But there's also growing that strength, which, you know, Wooden reinforced to you and many coaches reinforced to you that, you know, it's play, practice, play, practice. Just keep working at these things that you are good at. So I think, but that leads to two questions. One is, how does somebody know or begin to know where their opportunity is? Because many people don't know. And then what teachers, what did you learn about growth along the way that maybe not was so obvious?
Well, for me, what I learned was that you have to, if you want to contribute to society, you have to have some knowledge, you know? So the fact that I wanted to get a college degree and I stayed at UCLA until I did, I think that helped improve my life.
And John Wooden even told you, when you first met him, he told you, you have to stay here for 4 years, or he wants students who stay for the full 4 years.
Well, John Wooden said that he expected me to graduate, you know, and in those days, if you didn't graduate, it was very difficult to proceed as a basketball player. So, you know, I had a lot of reasons to want to graduate, but I am the first person in my family with a college degree. Mm-hmm. So it's a double thing. You do it for yourself, but you also do it for your community, because as the community becomes better educated and more affluent, things in the community improve. So I think that is the one thing for individuals or groups. Knowledge is power. Put yourself in the best position to do the best thing that you can for yourself.
And now we live in this society that's almost attention glutted. Like, there's so much social media, there's so many distractions for our attention. What's the best way, you think, for a young person to start improving their knowledge?
Well, it all depends on what they want to do. You know, for some people, they need to go and see if they can take a computer course, or other people need to, I'm really interested in plumbing. You know, I know that the plumber's getting paid because they just left my house. And, you know, if they don't take care of you, you're going to end up with your house smelling bad and the plumbing won't work. So, you know, there's plenty of means to become successful in America. You just have to figure out what it is that you want to do for yourself and then pursue it.
And then it seems like, again, from Bruce Lee to Muhammad Ali to Wooden to many others, you learned about, okay, you've given that opportunity, given something that you're good at or interested in, what's the best way to develop those skills? Like with Bruce Lee, you practiced many years, or not many years, but for a long time, martial arts. Obviously, you had great coaches in basketball. What were kind of some of the, what would you impart into someone who says, okay, teach me something so I could be the best at something?
Well, you have to understand that fundamental preparation is essential to success. No matter what it is that you're doing, you have to be fundamentally sound. So for somebody that's going to study chemistry, well, there's certain things that they have to know fundamentally, and then they can make progress and become successful in that field. If you're going to become a legal student, you have to go pass the LSAT, the Legal Scholastic Aptitude Test, in order to show that you have an aptitude to do well as a lawyer. And there are many different tests and ways of figuring out what your aptitude is. But, you know, once you figure it out and figure out what your path should be, you just have to be willing to pursue it and put in the time and make the effort.
And it seems like it's a little bit more than the sense of you also have to figure out what the basics are. And it's almost like you need guidance for that. Like when you, in your first coaching session with Wooden, you describe, you know, you thought maybe you were going to get basketball drills and run around the court. And he taught all the players how to put on their socks.
Right. Yeah. And just so fundamental for a basketball player. But if they don't understand that, if you know, they have blisters on their feet from putting their socks on wrong, they won't be able to practice. If they can't practice, they won't be up to speed with what the team is trying to do. And if you're not up to speed, you won't get playing time. So all of these things have to do with preparation and understanding what your role is. And the more clearly that you understand that and the more work that you're willing to put in to master those fundamentals, the more successful you're going to be.
Let's stop to take a quick break. We'll be right back. I hope you enjoy what I've been doing. I don't ask for a lot, but please take a moment to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you get your podcasts. It will only take you a second, but it will help other people discover the podcast. And my goal is to share this great content with as many people as possible. To see the show notes, just head on over to jamesaltucher.com/podcast. While you are there, you can join my free insiders list to get notified when I post a new podcast. Once again, thanks so much for joining me on the journey of this podcast. You mentioned the Bruce Lee quote, I fear the man more who practices one kick 10,000 times than the man who practices, you know, 10,000
kicks one time.
Yeah. I guess in basketball for you, you became such an expert at what became known as your skyhook.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you still have to kind of have coverage of all the skills needed in any field.
Right. You have to be able to be totally capable. In basketball, you have to be able to play both ends of the court and make a difference at either end in some way. And that's just takes a dedication and an understanding of the fine points of in what you're talking about, what we're talking about here, basketball. But it can be the same for so many other different disciplines.
And I guess why didn't you ever think of the you know, you had been playing basketball for many years at that point. Why didn't you think of the pulling on your socks the right way? It took Wooden to sort of tell you this basic fundamental thing that was so important.
Well, I never had a problem with my socks, you know. I got past that earlier in life.
What was the difficulty for you?
I really didn't have very much difficulty in basketball. By paying attention to my coaches and going to the places that I went, I was able to be successful everywhere that I played basketball. I was very fortunate in that sense.
Let's take now, you know, you've written a Sherlock Holmes novel, you've written a graphic novel. When you switch to a completely new field, even though you make some analogies between basketball and the way Mycroft Holmes thinks, what was difficult in sort of, that becomes an identity thing too. You went from everybody knew you as a basketball player to now I'm going to be a Sherlock Holmes writer. What was the challenge there?
Well, the challenge is always, do you know what you're doing? Do you know what you're talking about? So for me, I had to be pretty well schooled on Victorian England and Arthur Conan Doyle's take on the Holmes family. And I just used that as a as a foundation to write about a character that got very little attention in Arthur Conan Doyle's original canon. Mycroft is only mentioned like 5 or 6 times in passing. But to me, it seemed like he would be a very important person in Sherlock's life because in talking about Mycroft, Arthur Conan Doyle says at some times he was the British government. Wow, you know, under Queen Victoria. That implies a whole lot. So from that, I was able to, you know, work it backwards and figure out what his backstory could be. And it ended up being interesting enough for me to write a successful novel.
So it's almost like you saw this blank space in something he said. At times he could be the British government.
Right.
Oh, and that's a throwaway line almost. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Yeah, what does it mean?
And you answered the question.
I was able to exploit it and use it to write an interesting story.
And so now, I'm interested in relating this back to religion. Like, obviously, you had many influences who are turning to Muslim and changing their names. Like, for instance, you were friends with Cassius Clay, who became Muhammad Ali. You were being influenced by, again, you mentioned the autobiography of Malcolm X and other sources. Mm-hmm. What led to, and I know I apologize if you've talked about this many times, but I'm curious for myself, just in terms of the context of identity, how did religion impact the way you thought about yourself?
Well, you know, I was raised Catholic, and I had a strong belief in monotheism. But I had a problem with some of the things that the Pope and other Catholics did to people from Africa, exploiting them as slaves. But I still had a strong belief in monotheism. So the type of monotheism most commonly practiced in Africa is Islam. So I decided to investigate Islam on that basis, and reading the autobiography of Malcolm X helped me get a more fundamental and in-depth understanding of Islam and encouraged me to learn more. And I eventually ended up becoming Muslim. But it was a process that I went through and learning what the facts were and how they related to me and how I wanted that to relate to my life.
How did they relate to you? Like, what's the strongest impact of the let's say, the 5 pillars of faith in Islam? What's been the strongest impact on your life?
Well, I think that Islam has given me a moral anchor. The fundamentals are the same as Christianity and Judaism. The golden rule, treat others as you yourself wish to be treated. This is very prominent in Islam as it is in Christianity and Judaism. So it wasn't a big stretch for me to become Muslim.
You know, as you were writing this, what were you coming to grips with in terms of, you know, again, everybody views you as this great basketball player, or you're the guy who changed his name and that became this big impactful thing when the moment you did it, you know, you were again coming to grips with who you are. Do you think you kind of reached that point where you were really sort of satisfied with where you were?
Well, that's hard.
Does anyone ever get satisfied?
I don't know if anybody gets total self-satisfaction, but as far as I was concerned, I was satisfied with my belief system. I felt that my belief system made sense, and it was helping me improve my life, and that was the most important part of it.
In what way?
In giving me a moral anchor and enabling me to understand the difference between right and wrong.
And so, you know, there's so many photos of you, and I've seen, you know, also the documentary on HBO about you. And in a lot of the photos, you know, you're so serious.
Yeah.
And you're so, it almost looks like people can't see you because you're in your head somehow. You're like deeply reflective. What stopped you from smiling all these photos? I don't know if that's a dumb question or not, but...
No, that's not a dumb question. That's actually a very good question. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that I've been scrutinized so much because of my height. And I'm always feeling that people are watching me because throughout my life, they have watched me. They see me first. So I kind of have that wariness of somebody that's in the headlights all the time. It can be daunting.
And so again, is this what? I mean, even your documentary is the documentary about you is titled "A Minority of Cream, A Minority of One." Do you often feel that this scrutiny has led you to kind of just withdraw inward and just be in your thoughts so you can kind of avoid all the people looking?
Well, you can't avoid the people looking, but it probably makes me feel that I need to be on guard more so than the average person who can disappear in a crowd. I can't do that. So I always have to be on guard.
I mean, in that sense, you know, and again, I think your experiences with Coach Wooden, who you even wrote a book about, probably helped you figure out as well who you were in a crowd and who you and what inside of you you can respect and contribute to your identity. What are some of the main things he taught you that really still affect your life today?
Well, Coach Wooden helped me understand that I could be whatever I wanted to be. A lot of guys go to college and figure that if they get through the basketball program, they'll have a chance to play professional basketball, and they neglect their academics. I never had that problem, and Coach Wooden encouraged me to be successful academically and as an athlete, and it worked out for me very well. But a lot of people don't want to go through the effort, and Coach Wooden helped me understand that effort was worthwhile.
How did he do that?
Just by showing us his life, you know. He was very successful. He was an All-American. He played professional basketball, and yet he went on to do great things. So, what you go through on your way through life always prepares you for what the next step is. And, that's how it was in my life.
You know, in terms of like skill development, how much do you think talent, what percentage do you think is talent and what percentage do you think is skill and work?
Geez, I you know what I think it has to do with people's competitive nature. You know, guys that like to compete, that enjoy it, they're not disturbed that they want to go out there and crush the opposition. They have that desire and the ability to do that. Those are the successful people in various fields. And I think really competitive fire really determines the championship athletes from the ones that don't make it, because it's that desire that gets you across the finish line.
Like regardless of, not regardless of, but on top of talent.
On top of talent, yeah.
Because clearly you were talented.
Yeah, I've seen, I coached in the NBA now. I coached 6 years with the Lakers. I was an assistant coach. And I saw players come in that had all kinds of physical talent, but they just weren't into it. They didn't have the work ethic. And they didn't have the competitive fire to go out there and compete. And they didn't do as well as other players who might not have had as much talent, but were into the competition and knew how to fit themselves into a team and contribute.
And so how do you think someone, obviously it would have benefited these guys to have the work ethic. What separated them out from the people who had the work ethic versus the people who didn't? Like what internal thing were they missing?
I don't know.
You were their coach, though.
That doesn't mean that I know what's going on inside their head and inside their soul. It was my job to try and get guys to give their best effort and to play at the top of their game. But there's only certain guys that are able to do that and be effective.
You know, I think part of it for you was also that, you know, in the 60s, early 70s, you... being a great athlete and African American, you kind of had this this voice that people listen to at a very early age for somebody. So you were involved in, for instance, the so-called Cleveland Summit where Cassius Clay, everybody was, Jim Brown and Cassius Clay were having the debate of whether or not Cassius Clay should go to Vietnam, Muhammad Ali should go to Vietnam. And did you feel, oh wait, I'm really young to be in this group and having this kind of influence?
No, I didn't feel like I was too young. A number of people in the civil rights movement were very young when they lost their lives. I'm thinking about the four girls in Birmingham in 1963, and then Emmett Till in 1955. He was only 13. So, you know, the fact that the civil rights situation in America touches you when you're a child doesn't change anything. It's still the same set of circumstances, and they still need to be changed.
And right now, and today's, you know, so now it's 50 years after that moment. Where do you see the problems now?
Well, I think the problems now are the fact that we have a leader who has a nostalgia for a time when white people actually were supreme. And equality was not something that was granted to all people, especially people of color. And there's a nostalgia for that time. And unfortunately, some people have embraced it.
And so, you know, you wrote Becoming Kareem. It basically ends at the beginning of your professional career. Many things happen to you after that. Do you see kind of a part two of this? I mean, I'm sure we all want to know how you kept on evolving as a person after this.
Well, the part two of it will be, you know, I'm going to go on tour. Becoming Kareem, it has motivated me to try and do a tour where I will talk about all of these issues. If you want to learn about it, you can go to our website. It's called becomingkareem.com. And I'll be going around the country. We're going to do a number of cities, myself and Roy Firestone, and we're going to talk about this book and what it means, and hopefully people will get an insight into my life and how I got to be who I am.
And I think the key, too, is helping people figure out who they are, because I think we're all, to some extent, a minority of one.
Right. We all go through this. You know, we all have to figure out what our path will be, and so often it's not what our parents did, and we got to figure it out for ourselves. I think every generation has to do that.
Well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Becoming Kareem, I think this is a very moving book. I think you dealt with so many different issues, and I think you're just, I don't know, so much thought comes through in the way you dealt with these issues, as opposed to just being like, oh, the greatest basketball player ever. You really see your identity coming through in this book, and I really appreciated you writing it and me reading it.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, it's nice to be able to communicate these things at this time of my life. You know, I never thought that people would be interested. And that the fact that I can write these books and people are curious enough and wanting to be knowledgeable, I'm very flattered by it, and I'm happy to share. So thank you for having me on your podcast.
Thank you, Kareem. Such a great honor to talk to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And if you liked that episode, subscribe to the James Altucher Show on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever it is you get your podcasts.
Next time on the James Altucher Show.
Suddenly the song was number one the first day, the day of the release, it was number one in 14 countries.
Let's say I want to write a song that gets 4 billion views.
Mm-hmm.
What should my first few steps be?
You know what? I don't think about the numbers. The main thing is for you to connect with the world. The more I travel, the more I understand the human being. I see life with the eyes of a child. Humans start to complicate things like, let's study the song, what happened? And they did this and that. It was so organic. It came out so easily. I mean, everyone has their own talent, and my talent is expressing it through writing songs and from singing them, you know?
You seek the key, But first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.